This recording is a service of the Allen County Public Library's audio reading service. It is specifically designed for and directed to people who have visual, physical, learning, or language challenges to reading traditional printed materials.
We all want to live better. Healthy Life will help you discover how. From exercises and diet to dealing with life issues like relationships and stress, you'll discover useful, down-to-earth information on healthy living from magazines like Health, Weight Watchers, and Personal Best Headlines. It's all about wellness on a wide range of topics to bring you a healthy life. Coming up next on your audio reading service.
Welcome. This is Healthy Life, and I'm your reader, Tony Ray, with the audio reading service at the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Today I'll be reading from Women's Health, and I'll begin with an article called SIP Smart Strategies. Experts read the tea leaves for you and share tips for getting the most healthy perks and flavor from each and every cup of tea. This article by Susan Chuang. Do you swear by chamomile tea to get quality shut eye? Love yerba mate for those moments when you need a strong jolt? Or maybe you're just curious about the 3,000 plus varieties of tea out there. Let's start with the basics. All varieties of tea, black, green, white, oolong, come from leaves of the Camellia sinensis plant. What determines the color is how long the leaves are exposed to air. That's oxidized. The longer the time, the darker and more robust the tea. Most white and green teas are unoxidized. Oolong is semi-oxidized, and black is the most oxidized. Herbal tea, however, is kind of a misnomer. They're not true teas because they don't come from the plant I just mentioned. We could take a cue from the French and call them infusions instead. As you might surmise, these infusions can be made from herbs, that's mint or lemon balm, for example, but also from flowers like lavender, hibiscus, and jasmine. And then there's root teas, turmeric, and licorice. And leaves from plants, robos and nettle. Herbal teas can offer the benefits of plants not typically consumed, says Marissa Meshulam, RD and founder of MPH Nutrition, based in New York City. Case in point, when was the last time you chomped on camellia flowers? A chamomile flower. But when dried and steeped in hot water, they result in a soothing beverage that many drink as a sleep aid. Ginger is another ingredient you wouldn't eat on its own, but can be a panacea in tea form. It's great for our GI system and provides an antioxidant boost. One big reason to drink teas of any kind, I'll include herbal infusions for brimming with polyphenols, antioxidant-packed compounds found in plant-based foods. Antioxidants help fight oxidative stress in our bodies, keep our cells tip-top shape, and reduce the risk of chronic disease. Time to get brewing. But first, caution. They may sound harmless, however, it is possible to overdo it with herbal teas. You know the deal. Consult with your doc to check if they'll interact with any medications and for advice if you're pregnant. Super source. Looking for a little hit of energy? Different teas boost varying levels of caffeine. But even with teas on the high end of the spectrum, your body will process the caffeine in them more slowly than it would a regular amount of coffee. That's thanks to the L-theanine found in tea. Green tea has the most, which slows down absorption of the stimulant helping you avoid a post-Java crash, says New York-based dietitian nutritionalist Asako Miyashita. Another reason to love the amino acid? L-theanine, in combination with caffeine, produces sharper focus and mental clarity. Also, study participants who took part in the L-theanine performed better and faster on attention tasks, found research in Journal of Medicinal Food. That's cool. Caffeine clarity. How much is really in your mug? The breakdown as follows per 8-ounce cup. So OMG Chamomile, this nighttime favorite, is a caffeine-free, as you might guess, which is in the case with many other herbal infusions. So there's zero. Green tea has 30 to 7 milligrams. Many steeps fall within this range, but there are a few powered-up exceptions. Some black teas, 50 to 90 milligrams of caffeine. Generally, the darker the tea, the more caffeine it contains. English breakfast, a blend of a different black teas, and Assam, the tea often used to make chai, are just a couple that will give you a boost. Matcha has up to 75 milligrams. There's a reason for this revved up green tea is a morning mainstay. The yerba mate is 80 to 100 milligrams. The most notable outlier in the herbal infusions category has about the same amount of caffeine as a cup of coffee. And the last one is 140 milligrams with ghee kuro. Another green tea that can pack a very high caffeine punch depending on how it's prepared. And I'll spell that. It's G-Y-O-K-U-R-O. Let's talk about steeping for success. Even the best teas won't taste great if you don't prep them properly. We asked Corina Gibb, co-founder and owner of Immune Scheme Tea House in New York, how to steep like a pro, and she gave three excellent rules. Perfect your water temperature. Some teas are best steeped at a boiling temperature, like black teas, dark oolong, puerh tea, and pretty much all herbal infusions. More delicate teas, white teas and Japanese green teas, should not be brewed at boiling temperatures. That will burn their leaves and release bitter flavors. Prioritize water quality. The water will also affect how the tea tastes. Feel free to use the water you drink at home, whether it's filtered or straight from the tap. Skip anything that's chlorinated or overly treated. The last rule, time it right. Most teas can steep for 3 to 4 minutes in hot water, though Japanese green teas need only 1 to 2 minutes. Oversteeping releases more tannins, mouth-drying compounds that make tea astringent. So go ahead and set the timer. We turn to Wellness Curious in the magazine, and nerve flossing is the topic. The technique's purported payoff, smooth, pain-free mobility, by Jennifer Nied. I'm noticing more friends flossing lately, but it's not a surge in dental hygiene. Instead, it's a way to improve nerve health and move freely. Nerve flossing, or gliding, is a stretching technique that's easily done on your own and is said to relieve a host of symptoms. How it works. Nerves get compressed by surrounding tissue, creating sensations like pain, numbness, or tingling. And nerve flossing is a way to free and get them moving, says Shannon Leggett, a New York City-based physical therapist. Think of it like a dynamic stretch for the nerve. Essentially, you're carefully and mindfully moving the joints around the target nerve. In practice, it looks a lot like stretching, but with even slower and more specific movements. Ahead, physical therapists on mobilizing your nervous system with this technique and what to consider before you give it a go. It's the same as stretching. Well, not exactly. Both modalities help improve range of motion and are important, but there are nuances to each. For example, in a static hamstring stretch, you apply tension through the full length of the muscle. In this case, pulling your extended leg to its limit and holding to target the hamstring hemi muscle. When flossing, say, the sciatic nerve, which runs along the leg, you pull one knee toward the chest, extend leg up and point foot, then bend knee and flex foot. Nerve flossing doesn't mean pushing to your end range. Instead, you put tension on one end of the nerve while adding slack to the other, and this is key. Nerves are delicate, and their main function is communication, so pushing them to or beyond their limit can aggravate aches. Muscles are made for moving and can take more strain than nerves. It's totally safe to do on your own. Yes, but start with a pro. Nerve flossing is common PT homework that doesn't require equipment. So yes, anyone can do it at home, but you may not need it or really know what areas to focus on. That's where working with a physical therapist comes in so you can do it properly. There is no one-size-fits-all solution to nerve pain. And gliding the wrong nerves could make the problem worse. If it hurts, it's working. Definitely not. The goal of nerve flossing when done properly and in the right area is to diminish pain and discomfort. Targeting your nervous system is different from massage or foam rolling, where a little eek is okay due to the very delicate nature of the nerve tissue. If pain happens and symptoms intensify, become more frequent, or extend farther down the arm or leg away from the spine, a sign of increased nerve tension, that's a flag to get to press the pause button. You may just need to adjust your technique or modify your range of motion, which is where pro guidance is clutch again, to finesse your form so you can focus on healing. Rosalind Frazier has written an article called Digging Deep. Meet athletes with different health challenges. Their commonality, they all learn to live while owning their condition. Lindsay Hu, 41, was a former pro soccer player, youth soccer coach, and founder of Grittiness. Everything we experience in life that's good, bad, or ugly can be used as a vehicle for triumph. When I think about the day I had my heart attack, nothing stands out. I was walking up on a hill on the way to coach a youth soccer team when it happened. And remember, she was 41. But when I looked at the amount of stress I was under at that time, it was actually makes sense. I was going through a divorce. I had 5 children, one with high needs. My dog had been diagnosed with cancer and geriatric vertigo. I had come out of retirement and was a 36-year-old old playing semi-pro soccer against a bunch of 20-somethings. And I was coaching several youth soccer teams. All of this was compounded by not having help or outlets for stress. While I may not have realized just how much this was affecting my heart, I kind of predicted my own heart attack. I remember several text exchanges with my therapist in which I stated, somewhat nonchalantly, that I was going to have one. Then, in 2019, on a September day, I felt as if someone had ripped something inside me. like how you rip a piece of paper with your hands. That was a fire in my chest. I was sweating and super nauseous. It was the most pain I've ever felt. I was healthy. I ate clean. I was in great shape. I thought it must be some really serious heartburn. And later at the hospital, I learned that I had had a heart attack caused by a spontaneous coronary artery dissection, SCAD, a sudden tear in the heart artery wall that can slowly or block blood flow. I was shocked, not only that I had had one, but that I was a woman that was fit, doing intense workouts, but I did have extreme stress. Afterward at home, I wanted to be active and involved with my kids, but I felt so tired. It was like an out-of-body experience. I knew what needed to be done, but my body would not cooperate. It would take 25 to 30 minutes to recover from just getting up to go to the bathroom. The darkest part of this period was the realization that I could go from being a Division I national champ to lying on a couch and struggling to feed myself. To keep my spirits up, I told myself this was temporary, and at some point I was going to be functional again. I also took a cue from my collegiate soccer coach and was a coach about living with intention. They always said everything that we experience in life, good, bad, or ugly, can be used as a vehicle for triumph. There was no way I was going to let this destroy me. Yes, it stopped me from playing high-level soccer, which wasn't good, but I didn't get to choose my ending in the sport. But it will also help me start my mental strength training business, Grittiness, in which I felt I was a mentor to female soccer players, and I would help teach them how to tap into their own resilience. I don't think I'll ever be 100% again, but I am 100% of where I need to be right now. That means instead of playing soccer professionally, I play pickup games with my sister. I have to be very strategic and calculate with how I am going about things, which means making a daily calendar and organized by the hour to help me understand my bandwidth. I don't want to overcommit and end up exhausted 3 days later. Ultimately, I respect the fact that my heart attack happened. I went through a difficult thing, and though I can't control whether it'll happen again, I have worked very hard to control the things that I can, and that's enough for me. Our next woman is Sarah Whittingham, 49, an Air Force veteran, an anesthesiologist, an Ironman athlete. Here's her story. I did one Ironman in 2002, and after I was done in the Air Force, I just to do it and then stopped. In 2016, I decided to get back into the races with the sole goal of making it back to Kona, the Ironman Championships in Hawaii. At first, I put up some good times, but then I got progressively slower, finishing about 2 hours longer than normal. I couldn't figure out what was going on. By May of 2019, my frustration got the better of me, and I quit racing again. 6 months after I wrapped my career, I was sitting on the couch with my family watching a movie when my husband said my arm was shaking. I wondered why I would have one side resting arm tremor. I Googled it, and all of these facts pointed to Parkinson's. As I started reading, I realized I'd been having some of these symptoms, being super sore in the mornings and finding the volume of my voice trailing off at the end of sentences for several years, but chalked them up to getting older. The next day, a neurologist at the hospital where I'm an anesthesiologist confirmed my diagnosis of Parkinson's. It was a lot to process. The visions I had of my life in my retirement years immediately changed. I pictured myself disabled and not capable of doing anything. I also went through the stages of grief. Denial first, then anger, and then some point acceptance, being moving forward, which I did. At the time of my diagnosis, I had exercised since I stopped training. I was feeling sorry for myself. I gained weight. I was depressed and anxious. A movement disorder specialist gave me a list of research studies on physical activity and Parkinson's symptoms management, and I enrolled in a year-long one studying the effects of cycling on the disease. Since I hadn't been exercising, riding for 20 minutes on a bike was hard. By the end of the study, though, I was riding for an hour, 4 or 5 times a week, and I felt better, stronger too. My anxiety, sleep, stiffness, and rigidity also improved. I didn't tell my husband, who was also signed up for a race in 2022. I was secretly training to see how it would go. On race day, my goal was just to finish, but I surprised myself, beating my husband by almost an hour and coming close to my time prior to having Parkinson's. I qualified for a spot in the Half Ironman World Championships in St. George, Utah, that October, where I also competed and completed the race. I've also and always been inspired by the Ironman stories. As I was watching the Kona Championships broadcast from 2022, the story of Chris Nikic, the first person with Down syndrome to finish an Ironman, caught my eye. I thought, he has more challenges than I do, and if he could do a full marathon, maybe I could too. So, I rode Ironman, and 8 months later, I received a bid for the race. As I ran down the Ali Drive toward the finish line, I was overcome with emotion, accumulation of all the self-doubt and what I had been through over the previous 3 years. Even during the race, when my medication started to wear off because I had forgot to retake it, which made my mind and body slower, I stayed positive. I remember thinking of all the other people going through Parkinson's and how I hoped they'd realize that they too could get back to doing what they loved, whatever that may be. Even with these victories, I've still had to adapt how I judge myself. I've learned to be more patient. If I have a bad workout, I don't get upset. Instead, I do yoga to feel better. I always know that if I can force myself to smile, it'll be okay. So I think of something good about the moment and try to be grateful. To be honest, even though Parkinson's is a tough diagnosis, it's enriched my life in lots of ways, making it more full and meaningful, and it's given me more of a purpose. Well, that's all the time we have for today. This has been Toni Ray with Healthy Life. I hope you've enjoyed today's reading from the audio reading service at the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana.